This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, everybody. Richard Pollock filling in the host chair for Drew Mindell, joined in studio by the lovely Ezra Ginsberg and Michael, the station Remus, on loan from the Rick Ralph Show, the Roundtable, on loan from the Warm Up, on loan from
the Weigh In,
on loan from H&L. There's a reason you call him the station.
Remus is omnipresent. He's not on any of the shows, meaning he's on every show now. Every show.
Double negative to start the show, Ezzy. I like the way you're
double
going
negative.
With that. You're listening, of course, to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We're going to jump into a number of topics throughout the show. We're on our two-hour version of the show. We're going back to 3 hours once the calendar hits September and the jet season gets started. We're going to talk about the ownership changes in New Jersey. We're going to talk about the Daniel Alfredson debacle. We're going to talk about that at length. That's really blown my mind, frankly. We're going to have James Gordon on of the Ottawa Citizen to discuss that in about two segments. We're going to discuss the unsigned RFAs. That's restricted free agents. Last week, we delved into the unrestricted free agents and who's left out there. We're going to talk about the players whose rights are owned by teams, but they're not yet signed. We're going to talk about the body checking rules in youth hockey and how that's going to, you know, the effect of that on an ongoing basis. It's the first year that's in place. Gabriel Landeskog, of course, in the Jets division with Colorado. He signed an extension. We're going to address that. Bill Zito, a player agent, moving from representing players to the Columbus Blue Jackets. We're going to talk about all of those issues. And then a little later on this segment, we're going to delve deeper into the Josh Harris and David Blitzer purchase of the New Jersey Devils from Jeff Vanderbeek. But I think we'd be remiss if we didn't start off the show addressing last night's quote-unquote performance. I don't know what you want to call it, of the Winnipeg Blue Bombers at Investors Group Field. This is the third game in a row I've been at. The third game in a row I stayed till the end. And the third game in a row where there was very little traffic because nobody else stayed till the end. There's really nothing about this team right now that inspires much confidence. And I'm certainly not a football expert. Ezzy, you know more about it than I do. And Drew knows quite a bit about it as well. And Remus, feel free to get in here whenever you want. But my biggest beef, and I had a lot of beefs with last night, my biggest beef is this. And I stayed till the end of the game, so this is why I'm going to talk about this. You're down 16 points. There's about a minute and a half left. I think it's 3rd and 10 on your own 10, 12-yard line. And you decide to punt. You can't win the game if you punt. You have probably a 0.002% chance of winning the game if you don't punt. But it's 3rd down. You're down by 2 scores, conceivably, if you get two point conversions, and the team decides to punt the ball. Can you at least pretend to want to win? Can you at least try to win? You're not going to, because can you at least exert some form of an effort to win? And that to me is really a metaphor for this whole team, this whole season, and I mean, where to go from here? You're probably looking at more firings, frankly, but is anyone's guess.
Richie, last night was a difficult one for Winnipeg Blue Bombers fans, and this year has been a very difficult year as a whole. And now the Winnipeg Blue Bombers are 0-4 at brand spanking new Investors Group Field, and we've only won one game, and we're last place in the entire CFL. And yes, that series that you're talking about, for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, they had to have been more desperate than they were. And there were parts of that game where Max Hall led the troops down the field and he threw for his first career touchdown and then got injured and then Buck Pierce had to come in. But the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, what I thought was the most indicative of their desperation level was the amount of penalties that they took. And a desperate team out more disciplined, more focused. And this organization is going through a really difficult time. And the Winnipeg Blue Bombers have gone through difficult times a lot over the last 15 years. There were ownership problems and you know, there have been highs and lows. The Grey Cup coming here several times was well attended. And the Winnipeg Blue Bombers have been to the Grey Cup finals a couple times in the last 10 years. They haven't won, obviously. But, you know, when you haven't won a Grey Cup in an 8-team league in 22 years, and all of us in this room of varying degrees are big Blue Bombers fans. You know, Drew and I were Blue Bombers fans. I worked for the Blue Bombers. You know, I've gone since I was a 5-year-old kid, right? Maybe younger. But what's happening is really difficult to swallow because of the way it's happening. And it doesn't just lie on one or two guys, but right now at 1-6, you know, Tim Burke, Gary Croton, it's going to be tough for them to keep their jobs when what they're putting out week after week, there's no light at the end of the tunnel with this team. And you'd think that with some of the young guys they have on their team and, you know, being in this new stadium and having all of this opportunity, they're and especially coming off of that bye week, I mean, they had a lot of time to get their offensive playbook together, defensive playbook together, and they came out and they stunk again.
I mean, all true. The penalties last night, disgraceful. Let me ask you something else. Who's the quarterback of this team? I'm watching last night's game, and you don't hear it till after, because, you know, sometimes the phone access isn't great there, although it was better last night in terms of internet and such. But, you know, Max Hall's in the game, and then Buck Pierce comes in, and then you got Goltz coming in for short yardage plays. Who's the quarterback? Just pick a quarterback and use him.
You know, I was on the H&L and the warm-up with Jay Richardson, and he made a comment to me, what are we going to see more of, more quarterbacks in the game or more touchdowns? And, I mean, I thought he was kidding, but, I mean, you got to give a guy some time to get in there and get in a rhythm. You can't be shuffling these guys in and out and flip-flopping. First of all, one, I mean, the guys can't get a rhythm, and two, you're just going to piss off all the quarterbacks that they don't know what's going on.
And you go, you know, you watch SportsCenter last week, they're really confident in Goltz, or 2 weeks ago. You watch SportsCenter this week, they really think Max Hall can do the job. In the middle of the game, they're shifting a guy in, they're shifting a guy out. There's no game plan, there's no organization. And when you don't have that, it's complete chaos. And I can imagine it's chaos in that locker room. You know, and think about it, you listen to the players last night, you read about this morning, well, you know, they don't know who the quarterback is. You know, how do you prepare that way? Every quarterback plays a different style. I thought, and another thing is the second half of, we'll move on after this, but the second half, is this team not making it? Like, what are they doing during the halftime? Are they having some pizza? Are they, you know, drinking some Cokes and playing poker?
Is that
the coaching staff doing? Because they're not making any adjustments.
Right, and that's a huge problem right now with this team. It's their, if you want to call it compete level, their discipline, whatever, their professional pride. There's no doubt in my mind that a lot of these players want to win.
Yeah, I
mean, the penalties and the way they're conducting themselves in difficult times doesn't really make you believe that this is a team that is going to turn this around. And if they're not going to turn it around, then you have to start looking at next year and bringing someone in for next year, because this year you're only in week 8. But they're almost out of the playoffs at this point if you don't turn it around. They've got a couple more weeks to turn it around. But you're not going to get into the CFL playoffs, even in an 8-team league,
right,
winning 4 games.
Last night's game was actually huge in that they beat Hamilton last night. They were tied with Hamilton.
Yeah.
Crazy enough as that seems. And Hamilton looked like the better team, looked like the more prepared team. Nothing about that performance made you think that those teams were on the same level of in any way, shape, or form. I want to leave it there. I want to move over to the New Jersey Devils, and, you know, as a team that you're quite fond of, and we only have a couple minutes here, but I think that'll probably suffice in terms of talking about this. The Devils have been, you know, kind of in flux ownership-wise for a number of years. At least it's been whispered about. You know, we've heard about it, you know, in the news a bit. You know, you hear about it from some other people. Finally, Jeff VanderBeek ends up selling the team that, you know, is so near and dear to his heart to Josh Harris and David Blitzer. Josh Harris owns the 76ers in Philadelphia and is a native of New Jersey, but buys the team that he says this team is staying in New Jersey, in Newark, New Jersey. He wants to be a big part of the future. He's keeping the core in place. I mean, to me, and he has a lot of money, a lot more money than VanderBeek. I think that's the key. Overall, for the NHL, I think this is a great success.
It's an absolutely great success when you consider that it took 4 years, Richie, to sell the Phoenix Coyotes and all of the, you know, the laughable ownership scenarios that played out throughout that whole drama in the desert. Dave Manukal, like that I plugged drama in the desert, bringing back the old days of illegalcurve.com. But the New Jersey Devils were really not doing well off of the ice,
right,
even though the Prudential Center is fairly new. And we've been there a couple times. We were just there for the draft.
It's beautiful.
One of the nicest arenas in the NHL. Yeah. And the New Jersey Devils, unlike the Phoenix Coyotes, are highly desirable because of the demographics of the area, the arena, how profitable it is. I mean, the Jobbing.com arena, even though I've never been there, is basically in the middle of nowhere in a commercial development that never really reached its full potential.
Right.
And the New Jersey Devils are a franchise that has a great track record, 3 Stanley Cups. They've been to the Stanley Cup Finals 5 times. Lou Lamoriello is one of the greatest respected, highly respected executives in the NHL. And this deal was not hard to do. And there were other guys that wanted to step up, and there was another owner from the area, and that fell through. And as soon as that fell through, Josh Harris stepped up with David Blitzer. And I think that it's nice because this wasn't as widely reported. I guess probably it didn't get as much press in Canada, I would say. Mm-hmm. I think in New Jersey and New York it got a lot of press, but Jeff Vanderbeek was having a lot of problems not being able to pay lenders that helped him take over majority ownership of the team in the first place. So Jeff Vanderbeek was struggling a lot, and they've said that they're going to keep him on as senior advisor, which is really just a I don't know if you want to call it a formality, but it's almost just a title. But you know, this is a guy who bleeds New Jersey Devils, and I know there were some concerns that if there was going to be a conflict with the Philadelphia 76ers, but I think that's pretty ridiculous. I mean, these guys have really deep pockets. You're talking about two different leagues. You know, if there's something going on with, bringing another team to that area, well, I mean, that really doesn't have that much to do with the Devils. Yeah. Maybe it helps them because now they have operating rights to the Prudential Center. But the reality is these guys are coming in and they're paying a good price for the team. Reports are it's $320-plus million. They didn't announce it, and they're not going to announce it. But you have to think that it's a good sum. And it's good. I mean, this is a team that needs solid ownership. With what happened to Ilya Kovalchuk, I don't think that had a lot to do with it.
No, I mean, I don't think it had anything to do with it, Ezzy, but I think overall the arena is very busy. That's one thing people need to take into account. Now, the area is sketchy. I mean, let's call it what it is here.
You're talking, just so people know, you're talking about the immediate vicinity of Newark, not the greater New York area. Just
no, of course.
Yeah. Newark is not, we heard things about people being a little bit scared to leave their cars outside. But yeah, it is. Newark is a rough area.
Well, we were told, we were personally told when on two different occasions of being there, when to walk, when to go to the games, or when to be around there, or there's cops kind of, around the area. So I think he wants to build, Josh.
Newark is a blue-collar town.
It's a blue-collar town, and I think there's crime and such. I think the new owners, what they want to do is they want to build around the area, which is great. Now, you mentioned Ezzy Glendale. Well, Newark is a little bit away, ways away from Manhattan, granted, but there's still a huge base. You're not in the middle of really of nowhere.
There's 20 million people around you.
So I think there's going to be, a real boon for the NHL. And especially you mentioned the debacle in Phoenix. You can start looking, kind of what have you done for me lately? And if the past two ownerships work out, I mean, Phoenix one still, to me, with the out and the 5 years and the $50 million of losses and all that, makes me think that team's on the way out eventually. But this seems like a very sturdy ownership group for the Devils. And I think for Lou Lamoriello, one of the best GMs really of all time, he's got to get some confidence from that, because that uncertainty and rest doesn't necessarily bode well for planning for the future. After the break, I mean, the Daniel Alfredson issue. He holds a press conference. Eugene Melnyk gets in on it. Brian Murray gets in on it. JP Barry, his agent, gets in on it. We're going to listen to the press conference. We're going to break it down. We're going to read the other comments. We're going to discuss it next segment. You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
the Legal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Here we go.
Great song. So Richie, we're getting some feedback on Twitter, and that we talked Bombers. We usually don't talk a lot about the Bombers, but I can assure you, the rest of the show will be all hockey. But we had to talk about the Bombers.
Yeah,
it's the summer. Bogo was at the game yesterday, And so my tweet was, there are two famous people at the Bombers game tonight. Zach Bogosian and Richard Pollock of Illegal Curve. And I actually got a personal text from Richie's mom saying that she loved the tweet. So
I'm not on
if
Twitter.
Richie's mom likes my tweets, because, you know, I'm a pretty corny guy. So I know it's a good one. So, you know, but it's all hockey from here on in, right, Richie?
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. That was Ezra Ginsberg on his soapbox, joined, of course, by Michael the Station
Remus. On my bento box.
By Michael the Station Remus. Michael, you were mentioning before we get into the Ottawa topic, and you got the clip ready. You're mentioning that the only show you haven't been on the station is The Big Show.
It's too early for me.
Too early, eh? Have you ever been asked?
No. God.
Well, then that's a different story,
too
right?
Early.
You know.
I've done every other show, though, including... I've never done Sports Inc. And I've never done Gold Eyes.
I think Paul Edmonds needs you in the booth for a game.
No one's better than Paul.
Yeah,
honestly.
No,
Paul's a big Remus fan. Likes how he's a big baseball fan, yeah, Mariners fan.
Paul does like Remus.
Doesn't like Remus right now? He's the station.
Let's not get crazy here. Jokes aside, Daniel Alfredson holds this bizarre press conference this week,
yep,
kind of breaking down why he left Ottawa. You know, really just a press conference to air out his dirty laundry. I mean, aside from the charitable work he's been doing, of course, in Ottawa. That ends up starting a firestorm from Brian Murray, Eugene Melnyk, J.P. Barry. So what we want to do is we want to actually play the presser. It's not very long. And we're going to break it down. We're going to cut it in the middle, kind of analyze exactly what we think happened in Ottawa this week. Remus?
Yeah, this is the prepared speech portion. I mean, he did a Q&A after, but he came in like he knew exactly what he was going to do. And it really just, I don't understand why that he would do this. But here, let's just play it.
Let me tell you how that happened. When I did my last contract with 4 years ending in the 2012 season, I was asked to help the team manage the salary cap by adding on an extra year to my contract. I agreed.
Okay. Stop right there for a second. Why? I mean, what you're doing there is throwing everybody under the bus. You're actually throwing yourself under the bus, too, because the NHL, Bettman has the ability to penalize the player for as much as, I mean, the minimum of 250 for kind of working with the team in that regard to kind of beat the system. Why would you come out and explicitly talk about, first of all, I mean, from the Ottawa perspective, they may say, you know, it lowers our cap hit. The Senators may also have been thinking, hey, if he ends up playing, he's playing on a $1 million deal. It's a good deal for us. So, I mean, that would probably be their argument. But you don't air out your dirty laundry like this. That, to me, that was the one that took it way too far. Want to keep going, Remus?
Yeah, sure. Let's keep it.
Each side fully expected I would retire and not play the 2012-13 season. However, after the 2012 season, I told the Sens I wanted to play another season. I also asked they would look at a possible extension for this upcoming season at a fairer level to balance out the 2 years for both of us.
Okay, stop it there. I mean, right there, I can see his point because he's playing for $1 million. Again, I don't know why he's talking about this and putting it out in public, but he wants, you know, he's playing for $1 million. So what he wants is the second year of that deal or another year of that deal, excuse me, to be, you know, he's asked for reportedly $7-6 million to average it out to be about $3.5 to $4.5 million per year. I can understand that. Now, there's a lot of reasons why the Senators were not on board with that, and I know some of them I can understand, some of them I can't. I think the big one there is your cap goes way out of whack, you know, vis-a-vis how profitable the organization is, Ezzy. Right? I mean,
right.
Eugene Melnyk wants to keep the team at I think $51 million cap hit because he's losing a lot of money. We're going to talk about that with James Gordon next segment of the Ottawa Citizen.
They agreed. Sadly, the contract negotiations went nowhere, but I played out the season as I had promised, and I believe this past season was, in my view, a very special one. And in late June this year, I decided I had it in me to play at least one more season. I told management I was willing to return, and I reminded them of our agreement from the year before, and to my disappointment, the negotiations again quickly stalled.
So stop there for 1 second. Apparently, now this is conflicting views on this. Brian Murray says he sent over an offer, I think it was about 4.5 or around there, to J.P. Barrie and just never heard back for like a week and a half. Emailed him and called him, and J.P. Barrie never returned his calls.
Right, Richie, and that to me is what is most troubling and questionable about what Daniel Alfredson said earlier this week. Because he's saying, essentially, that they had an agreement
right.
where he was going to get a contract for one more year, $4.5 million. Or roughly around there. And I have to believe that Eugene Melnyk and Brian Murray, if that is what they agreed on, or let's say that it was...
I think he wanted seven as.
Or for 1 year.
Yeah. To average out the 2 years to be $8 million for 2 years. So the $1 million for this past season and $7 million for next season to give him an average of four.
Okay, I thought it was seven over... $7 million for one more year, which is most likely going to be his last or second last, right? We'd agree on that, is a little outrageous.
I mean, $1 million last year, he's underpaid. $7 million this year, he's overpaid.
He's overpaid. Yeah. I mean, $7 million, you're one of the highest paid guys in the league. And Alfredson, you know, is a great player. You can argue he's almost a borderline Hall of Famer. Maybe no Stanley Cup hurts him. He's got an Olympic gold. But $7 million for one more year, it's a lot of money. But I mean, there are, to me, there's conflicting reports, and this whole business of averaging 2 years out. I mean, and he, like you said, Richie, he's airing this out in public. It seems like he's almost kind of making excuses.
And the idea, I guess, is the idea is if you take the $1 million for the last year, you allow the team to have more salary cap room. So if you look at it from that perspective, well, this year you signed for $7 million. The internal cap, whatever that may be, we think it's pretty low because Eugene Melnyk lost a lot of money in, with his businesses, would probably have not allowed the team to add Bobby Ryan. So
you have to think, guys, that J.P. Barrie doesn't think his client is worth $7 million at 40 years old. I mean, Yager, for example, is Yager not a good comparable? I mean, Yager signed with the New Jersey Devils, I believe, $2 million base with bonuses. Right. That can take it to four. At the end of the year, do you think Alfredson's going to have that many more points than Yager?
I think Solani's a good comparison, too.
I think Solani's above both of them. But yeah, they're in the same. These are guys that are at the end of their careers.
Yeah. Well, I mean that's the thing, Ezzy, right? So Bob Murray over in
Solani's not asking for seven, Richie.
No.
And Solani's better than Alfredson at this point of his career, I'd say, or close.
Quote.
And then only days later, several teams contacted me, including Detroit, and I knew the team well. I have friends who play on the team. I like their style of play. And I knew they needed a right-handed shot. I was also delighted by their enthusiasm about me and how they saw me fitting into their plans.
It's kind of weird, isn't it? Like, I mean, I know they could use, obviously, they have a lot of left-handed shooting guys, and they bring in Weiss, and they do need a right-handed shot, but just kind of a weird thing to drop into a scripted speech, no?
The whole thing is odd to me that he would just come out and rip the organization. I just—he must just be so furious with Ottawa. That's my
and it seems like Michael. It seems like it's Melnyk, not Murray. If you really read the comments closely, it doesn't seem like Brian Murray is the one he's going at here.
We do have Brian Murray comments for later, but I also can't believe how open he is about how they tried to get around the salary cap and how that's just like being whisked under the rug. Like the NHL's like, yeah, you know what? Everyone was doing that before. We're not going to investigate here. That's fine.
Reem, you have to think that
crazy.
Unless he wanted seven, which Richie just spoke of. I didn't realize it was seven, but let's say they're off by a million. You have to think that they're going to give it to him. I mean, to avoid all of this bad PR, because it is bad PR. Well, I mean, this just Daniel Alfredson has been the face of the franchise forever, 18 years, right? And this, I mean, they didn't want this to. I mean, this is that press conference. It was the word I would describe for that press conference was just ugly. I saw an ugly side of Alfredson, an ugly side of the business of hockey, an ugly side of what's going on with the ownership situation in Ottawa, and it just wasn't good.
And you know what, Ezzy, I think that's a great way to leave it. I want to leave it there. I want to come back. We're going to talk to James Gordon of the Ottawa Citizen. I think we're actually going to probably talk about this after James Gordon as well, because there's much to talk about here. I mean, from a legacy point of view, is it tarnished? We're going to ask James Gordon about that. We're going to ask James Gordon, would Alfredson have signed a contract in Ottawa for $5.5 million? Because if he wouldn't have, then, I mean, I think in reality, this is an emotional decision, and rightly or wrongly, and it may very well be rightly, and is it is winning a factor here? There's so many different elements to this story, and I think the best part for a hockey fan, especially outside of Ottawa and Detroit, is that, or in Ottawa and Detroit, frankly, that these teams are in the same division next year. So they're going to face each other a bunch. It's going to be a great new rivalry with you at McLean and Babcock coaching. Can't beat that. We're going to talk more about this Ottawa situation with James Gordon of the Ottawa Citizen after the break. You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Halfway through the first hour, this Saturday morning, Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Richard Pollock filling in the host chair for Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg and Michael Remus. We have a nice little Winnipeg music touch for our next Winnipeg native guest.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
James Gordon of the Ottawa Citizen joins us on the line. James, thanks for joining us today. It's obviously been a busy couple days for you. How are you holding up?
Not bad. A little better than Daniel Alfredsson and the Senators, I'm sure. It's been a bit of a weird week here for everybody, so it's been probably the weirdest week I've had since I started covering this team, and I've been here since the whole Danny Heatley thing. So,
which of course Eugene Melnyk kind of referenced, including JP Barrie. But you know, the first question I have is just, you know, what's the motive, James, for Daniel Alfredsson's comments at the press conference?
Well, I think the motive is that a week ago, actually, in our paper, we spoke to Eugene Melnyk, and up until that point, there had been this kind of narrative that everybody wanted everyone to buy, that Daniel Alfredsson, just felt that he had a better chance to win a Stanley Cup in Detroit, and, you know, that's why he just kind of up and left. And, you know, looking at the whole picture, I mean, Daniel Alfredsson is really, it's not just the team he's kind of settled in here. I mean, he's got four kids in the city. They all play hockey here. They all go to school here. He's very involved in charities, and it was a little weird for him to just all of a sudden say, okay, well, I'm picking everybody up and going to Detroit for a year. So that interview with Melnyk about a week ago kind of shed a bit more light on it, and he basically said Daniel Alfredsson was asking for too much money, and we couldn't do it, and we wanted to add more players too. And then so I think that started off a week of kind of talk, and then Alfredsson, I think, felt he needed to change the picture a bit and not have this kind of image of him out there as someone who, you know, was only about money. And he kind of threw the Senators under the bus a bit by saying, well, basically revealing there was some cap circumvention at their request, and that, you know, he felt that he'd been promised more money in the past, and when it came time to do a deal, that the Senators reneged. So it's just a really, really bitter, messy mess, and you see what happens there, and it doesn't really reflect well on anybody, but he'll go to Detroit, and everybody will start talking about hockey soon. And I think the hope for everybody will be that that's what the focus is kind of going forward.
James, before we brought you on, we actually played Daniel Alfredsson's speech from earlier this week. As far as the speech itself goes, do you think that was Daniel Alfredsson's words alone, or do you think JP Barrie, his agent, also helped him write that speech, or is it a combination of both? Who do you think that was really coming from?
Well, it's hard to say that. I'm sure he spoke to his agent and said, you know, this makes me look bad. You know, what do we do in this situation? And maybe they had a conversation about that. But, you know, everyone was kind of, well, I think Daniel Alfredsson will talk and we won't really learn anything. I mean, I didn't think that for a second. Daniel Alfredsson, since he got to Ottawa, has always been kind of a straight shooter, and he'll say what he's feeling, even if that isn't popular. I mean, you look back to the playoffs that just passed when the Senators went down 3-1 to Pittsburgh, and he was asked, hey, do you think you guys still have a chance to come back here? And he said, no, probably not. I mean, you know, looking at the talent on the two teams and how far behind they were, and a lot of people would expect the captain to step up there and say, yeah, you know, I guarantee a win next game, and then we'll take the series in seven. But, I mean, he said, no, I don't think we have a chance. So Gailey Alfredson has a bit of a history of telling things the way he sees them. So it wouldn't surprise me if his agent was involved, but it wouldn't surprise me if he wasn't either.
We're joined by James Gordon of the Ottawa Citizen talking about Daniel Alfredson and his, I guess, exit from Ottawa. James, the Citizen has had a couple pieces this week, and there's one that came out just yesterday about the fact that Eugene Melnyk's lost about $94 million since he took ownership of the Senators in the early 2000s. How much of his financial circumstances played a factor in this outcome?
Well, it was huge. If Daniel Alfredson had come to them and said, this is what I want, and they said, well, you know, we owed you, and you know, we want to keep you around till the end of your career, they could have just agreed to his terms. But that's not the way it's working right now in Ottawa. They have an internal cap that Melnyk revealed to us on player salaries in the $50 million range. And as you guys probably know, the cap is $64 million. So mm-hmm. they're well below kind of what the heavy hitters in the league are spending. And I think that bothered Daniel Alfredson, first of all, because he wanted them to add more talent so that they could make more of a push this year. And also just, he felt that the team, he had taken some sort of under market value deals in the past, and you know, without kind of reliving this whole last year on his last contract where they clearly circumvented the cap, I mean, he felt that they had a side deal there to kind of make up for that. So I think really that the money is the real reason. It's the main reason mm-hmm. that Daniel Alfredson isn't playing here anymore, and the team's inability to kind of meet his demands.
James, I think a lost a little bit in all of this is general manager Brian Murray, who I have a lot of respect for. I know Richard and Michael respect as a general manager, but were his hands tied as far as bringing Daniel Alfredson back for one more year or two more years? How much of a role did Brian Murray have in all of this?
Well, I mean, Brian Murray is the go-between between the owner and the player and the agent, and, you know, I'm with you guys. I think the franchise is really lucky to have him as a general manager, especially working under this budget that he's being forced to work with. And, you know, if you basically say to a guy, okay, here we're building a team, but, you know, the financial equivalent of, you know, a top six forward and an all-star defenseman, you know, like $14 million, they're not available to you. So, you know, go build me a winner. And he does it. I mean, mm-hmm. the Senators obviously surprised everybody on how quickly they've been able to do a rebuild. And you know, there is some debate on whether or not, you know, Detroit has a better chance to win the Cup this year because both teams finished in the same spot in their respective conferences last year. So Brian Murray deserves a ton of credit for building that team. And you know, it can't be easy for him also managing kind of the picture that emerges here, because I think he would have been happy to just let this whole thing kind of disappear and everybody move on. But he's been forced to address how all this happened, and he's been a good soldier for the team when you know, nobody looks good. So no, I think Brian Murray's played a big part in this, but I think he's kind of trying to do everything he can to make the situation work for everybody.
Joined by James Gordon of the Ottawa Citizen. James, from the NHL perspective, I know Bill Daly kind of came out and said they're not really going to look into this too much more, but based on the penalties handed down to the Devils, not having a first-round pick next year, and some other the goings-on, obviously, the, you know, the dealings with Vancouver and the Luongo contract, do you see the NHL investigating this further, or do you see them kind of saying, old CBA business, we're looking forward on new CBA business?
Well, that certainly seems to be their take right now. You know, we asked Daly that too, and he said, basically, if it happened the way that Daniel Alfredson described it, there is a problem here. But, you know, they seem to be holding to this line where it wouldn't be productive to go back that far and start, you know, opening cans of worms everywhere. So, you know, I think that if the Senators and Daniel Alfredson are smart, they'll stop talking about it, because Daly didn't close the door on looking at it later if they get some new information. So it's to their benefit to stop giving more sort of material for people to keep talking about it, and for the NHL to say, all right, you know, it's gotten bad enough that we really need to deal with this. So I think that you won't hear too much about it anymore, but clearly if you look at it from a the perspective of what Alfredson said, I mean, there was obviously something going on there that, I mean, like, I think that the league acknowledges that this happened a lot under the old CBA, but at least when nobody talks about it, you have this kind of viable backstory that, oh, you know, he's getting older and that's just a reflection, you know, in dollar terms. But when someone flat out says, look, they asked me to take this, to attack this year on so we could bring our cap hit down, well, it kind of throws your alibi out the window.
Correct me if I'm wrong too, James. Can Alfredson not be penalized as well for this?
Yeah, my understanding is that the player, if they enter into that agreement, then he can be penalized, you know, up to the lesser of, I think it's 25% of his salary or $1 million. I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but yeah, for sure. I mean, there's provisions in the CBA that the player can be punished too for knowingly entering that kind of arrangement. So again, it's not just to the Senators' benefit, but to Alfredson's benefit to just stop talking about it right now and not give Bill Daly a reason to step in again and say, whoa, okay, guys, you know, this is getting a bit much.
James, we have a few more questions about Alfredson, but we are going to ask you about some other players on the Ottawa Senators. So if you're willing to indulge us here for sure. A little bit longer, but as far as the contract that was offered to Daniel Alfredson by the Ottawa Senators, if there was a one-year deal offered to Daniel Alfredson for $5.5 million or in that general neighborhood, as it was by the Wings, do you think he would have accepted it?
You know, that's hard to say. I don't know that the Senators really got a chance to present that kind of a number because they came in really low at something between 4 and 4.5, and then they didn't hear from Alfredson again. I think at that point he had kind of made up his mind, you know. He basically said that twice they had told him that they would do an extension that was fair to make up for that $1 million year, which, you know, I don't know that he ever would have signed if he and the team thought he was going to play that year. So I think that he probably did take it personally that the Senators lowballed him after he says making these promises to do a fair contract to level out those 2 years. So, you know, if they'd come in right away with 5.5, I don't know what would have happened. That's just a hypothetical that we'll never know. But I think there was obviously some kind of other rift there based on past activities.
James, do you think this, how this has all gone down, will cloud the Senators' willingness to retire his jersey, at least in the near future?
Well, you know, I can't, again, that would be a complete guess, you know. It would be smart for them to kind of, you know, have a quick reconciliation here because Alfredson has been the face of the franchise for so long. And, I mean, I can't really describe how kind of beloved this player is in this city. You know, that would be the smart thing. I don't know if that's what will happen. There's a lot of hurt feelings this week here, and I don't know how long it'll take them to repair that. It could be a little while. So we'll see. But eventually, over time, I don't see any reason they wouldn't do it and really kind of give him the recognition he deserves here.
James, with Daniel Alfredson now a member of the Detroit Red Wings and the Ottawa Senators having traded Jacob Silverberg and a draft pick for Bobby Ryan, in your opinion, do you think the Ottawa Senators are actually better off without Alfredson and now with Bobby Ryan?
The Senators also sent a pretty good prospect in Stephen Nason, too, over to the Ducks, and they added Clark MacArthur through free agency. So if you look at them on paper, sure, I think they at least up front, are probably better off. Alfredson is still a great player, but he's certainly not of the caliber of Bobby Ryan based just where they are in their careers. I mean, if you look at them, you know, at Alfredson at that age, you can make a different argument. But I think it's pretty clear that Bobby Ryan is an upgrade on Daniel Alfredson. So, it's an unpredictable team when you have a team this young, too. And you obviously, there's injury issues and whatnot. I mean, they ran into a lot of that last year and still did pretty well. So, you know, overall, I think that they're at least, you know, where they were when Alfredson left, and you know, arguably a little better, sure.
Final question, James. Again, we appreciate your time. Jared Cowan was apparently offered, you mentioned the young, you know, young team, young defender, 8 years at $28 million. Not sure if that's confirmed or not. How do you see that negotiation ending up? Are you look? Is it going to be, because there was discussions of that, it was, you know, term was an issue they were discussing, and to me that's kind of a low number really when you talk about 8 years down the road. How do you see that all coming to be?
I don't know that a player... You know, like his agent said, it's a really strange kind of contract to negotiate, because everybody who's watched Jared Cowan thinks that he's going to be a really good defenseman, certainly top four, maybe top two. Mm-hmm. And but I mean, the guy's only played 90 games, and he's had a lot of injury trouble, and he's, you know, was obviously affected by the lockout last year, and so you have this defenseman where everybody kind of agrees he's going to be pretty good, but has no body of work to speak of. So, you know, if I had to guess, I'd say, you know, the team doesn't want him to go a year because then he has arbitration rights, and I don't know that he wants to be locked in until he's 30 years old here at that number. I think maybe there's a belief that he has a bit more offensive upside than people think he does, and, you know, that could push up a number later on. So, you know, if I had to guess, I'd say he's probably in line for one of these bridge deals in the 2 to 3 year range that will kind of allow everybody to see exactly what Jared Cowan is.
Well, it's certainly exciting over in Ottawa, James, so it must be interesting to cover, and we appreciate your time this Saturday morning, and hopefully enjoy your weekend, and we'll talk to you a bit down the road.
No problem, guys.
Thanks a lot, James.
Ottawa Senators are making news, and I think we want to touch a little bit more on this after the break, and then we'll get to the Gabriel Landeskog extension and Bill Zito, player agent, moving from representing players to negotiating against players.
Bill Zito related to Barry Zito?
I don't think there is a relation. I don't think he's his dad.
Reem, relation?
I want to know if he's related to Chuck Zito.
Also, good question. The interesting, I remember reading, I don't know if this was in Moneyball when they were talking about Barry Zito. I think it might have been when he was driving on the freeway and he saw a sign of this band of four guys and he asked his agent who it was, and he's like, that's the Beatles.
What?
Yeah, no joke. I'm not making that up, Michael. After the break, more Alfredson, Landeskog, Zito, and anything else. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Last segment of the first hour here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Richard Pollock filling in the host chair for Drew Mindell.
Drew who?
Exactly. Ezra Ginsberg, that was the voice you just heard, and Michael the Station Remus playing these tunes. I believe he plays the Beatles, makes it sound all good. This segment's brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For over 25 years, Rumors has been Winnipeg's home for the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com.
So Steve-O of Jackass fame. By the way, there's a new movie coming out by the makers of Jackass. I hope Remus
with
you heard about this.
With Johnny Knoxville?
Johnny Knoxville.
Bad Grandpa, is that what it is?
Are we going to go?
I'm looking.
We're going to go get some popcorn and check it out?
Aren't you on a diet, Ez?
Yeah, I'm on a bit of a diet. Like,
you just told Jordan Sisiwa off air that you started taking vitamins.
I did.
What kind of vitamins?
I love it. You guys, nothing gets by you guys off air.
Well, hold on. Is it Bad Grandpa it's called?
Bad Grandpa.
Yeah.
Like remember that movie Bad Santa?
Right, but remember the character from Jackass when Johnny Knoxville would dress up as the grandpa?
Irving Zisman.
Yeah. Remus knows the name.
It's a great skit. I think it's like going to be like a Bruno Borad reality mixed with some scripted stuff, but it looks funny.
It's going to be a good movie. So Steve-O has been playing at Rumors.
Yes.
And I believe he's playing again tonight.
Yeah, he's playing all weekend.
He's playing again tonight, and again, maybe I think his last show is tomorrow or Monday.
Yeah,
so
he's got a few tomorrow.
Contact Rumors, official sponsor of the show, and there might be some tickets, but I believe they've all been sold out.
If you mention Drew's name, they might charge you double.
Exactly. The guy you really want to mention is Sheldon Mindell, but Steve-O, okay, this is a true story. Steve-O was on Corden. at a particular restaurant, and Remus was on cordon. And
do you think Steve-O was telling his friends about Remo?
That was going to be my joke. Oh. You stole it. I was going to say, Steve-O went up to Remus and said, "Aren't you Remus from TSN 1290?
No, that didn't happen.
Remus, do we have the Brian Murray clip?
Yeah, which one you want here?
The one we were just talking about before. You know, we played the Daniel Alfredson clip before having James Gordon on. Obviously, James Gordon provides you with the Ottawa citizen, well, the Ottawa perspective, of course, of the Ottawa citizen. James actually is a Winnipeg native, as we mentioned before. But here's the other side of it. It's not the Melnick side. And, you know, I have a hard time siding with Eugene Melnick. I'm more partial to Alfredson than I am to Melnick. But I'm actually probably more partial to Brian Murray than either of those three, than any of those three, excuse me. So let's hear what Brian Murray had to say.
That I remember about it very clearly was Daniel came to me in Vegas, indicated that he wanted to play this past year and one more year. And I was very happy to hear that, and I said that's something.
So far, so good at that point. Alfredson says he wants to play another year.
Right.
He signed for $1 million. That's confusing, but so far, so good. He wants to play two more years. Ottawa's happy to have him. He's been a lifelong Ottawa Sender.
We'll certainly work real hard at getting done. When I talked to his agent following that meeting in Vegas, again, it came out that he would play for $1 million, which was his contract this past year, but $8 million would be the number that he expects so that they get a level number over the two-year period. And I felt at the time we couldn't proceed at that number, and Daniel
Now, you can't proceed at that number, so that's $9 million over 2 years, $4.5 million cap hit. So Alfredson is penalized really for for being, you know, probably generous with the Senators and giving them the extra $1 million, that 1 year for $1 million. But, I mean, can you look at it in a vacuum or not? That's the question, because the $8 million this year, if he signs that, Bobby Ryan's not in the picture right now. And that sets back the organization probably in the long term. But then you have to question the loyalty factor. How long has he been in your team? How much of his heart and soul has been poured into the Ottawa Senators organization? How much of his heart and soul has been poured into the Ottawa community? It's a very difficult situation.
It's a difficult situation to blame one party or one side, right? But, you know, Eugene Melnick's quotes, even though they are extremely biased towards the team,
right,
about J.P. Barrie and the situation with Danny Heatley, you have to think that obviously not a lot has changed between J.P. Barrie, a very powerful, we should mention that, he's one of the more powerful agents in the NHL, you know, along with Don Meehan and these guys, Pat Brisson. These guys are powerful agents. They control a lot of the players and the contracts.
And Danny Heatley, I have no time for. I mean,
right. You know. He, that whole mess, that was a big mess.
Yeah.
Eugene Melnick, do you think he's forgot about that? Probably not.
Obviously not.
Into my office and suggested that he would play the year and see what he wanted to do after that.
So that's where it ends there. There's no more to that, is there, Remus?
There's another one if you want. It talks about how the talks broke down.
Yeah, you know what? Let's hear more of that.
Well, I thought that J.P. Barrie and I had a good meeting in Montreal prior to the draft. We both presented numbers that I was led to believe from talking to J.P. on the following Tuesday that he was going to talk to Daniel Alfredson and come back to me with a number that was the right number for them to stay in Ottawa and play.
You can tell by the tone there, I was led to believe, that seems to me to indicate that he thinks he was misled by J.P. Barrie. You read between the lines there. He thinks that J.P. Barrie led him astray. Keep going, Remus.
And I waited for that to happen. I was told that that would happen. Not that I was supposed to present another number. It was supposed to be the other way. That I told him I didn't really want to get into a long-winded negotiating session about Daniel Alfredson. I felt he deserved more credit than that. That tell me the right number, and we would meet it.
Okay, I want to jump in here, Richie, really quick, okay? Brian Murray.
Up against the break so quick.
Right. A guy we really respect, has done a great job, made some good trades, been a very good GM in the NHL, is basically saying that, you know, we offered him 4.5 and they wanted 7. So, and then it broke down from there. I mean, I'm telling you right now, I mean, this doesn't seem like Brian Murray is the one at fault here.
Brian Murray's been in the game a long time,
right.
Ezzie.
I don't think you're going to have pull the wool over his eyes.
You don't stay in the game a long time unless you're a classy guy, as far as I'm concerned. So there's something there that doesn't really sit right with me. That's 1 hour down already, guys. One more hour to go. We've got lots to talk about. After the break, we're going to talk about Landeskog and then the remaining RFAs. You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
One hour down, 1 hour left to go on Saturday.
I know what you want to call me right now, Richie.
August 17th, 2013. Richard Pollock in the host chair for Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg and Michael the Station Remus. Remus, I like the music you're playing today.
Thank you. That's what I'm known for around here.
Yeah?
Sure.
Usually I have you on, like, you know, the Metallica kind of track, AC/DC. Today you're varying it up a bit.
Probably because you're telling me what to play.
No, Remus and I actually...
No, that's not necessarily true.
Remus and I went on a road trip. We've gone on a few road trips. Draft in St. Paul in 2011, and a lot of the music that Remus liked, I liked. You know, he had like Red Hot Chili Peppers, and I like Metallica and you know, Pearl Jam, and so I like this. I like his choices.
Well, only problem is I haven't heard any music that was recorded after 2004.
RFAs, guys, and you know. The Jets are kind of done for signing guys. Well, they are done for signing guys, and we've said on the show before that it appears this is going to be their roster going forward. So leave that for another conversation. But there are some outstanding RFAs on the market. Now, again, RFAs, just for people who don't know, are restricted free agents, meaning the team who owns their rights. Any of the other 29 teams can sign the player. But the team with the player's rights, can match that deal, or alternatively take compensation in the form of draft picks for that player. There's still a lot of good RFAs available, and many of them fall under the category of no arbitration eligibility. So, if you recall last year when Evander Kane signed his 6-year deal, I believe it was 6-year, $33 million deal, or right around there. He signed it, I believe, in September. And that was right before the lockout occurred. Yep. But
the reason is the day before the lockout.
He had no arbitration eligibility. He had played 3 years in the league, and unless you've played 4 years in the league or certain age restrictions, you don't have arbitration eligibility. So the players on this list, you know, we have eight players, and I'm going to read you the list, and we're going to go one by one. We have Nazem Kadri, Cody Franzen, Alex Pietrangelo, Jared Cowan, who we just spoke about with James Gordon last hour, Cody Hodgson, Gustav Nyquist, Adam Henrik, and Michael Boddicker. Now, of those eight players, two of them actually had arbitration eligibility in Cody Franzen and Michael Boddicker.
Right.
But opted not to go to arbitration, which is, I want to talk about that first, which is interesting. I'd say even odd. And I'm kind of unsure of why it took that course.
It's puzzling. Let's talk about each one of them separately, really quickly, Richie. Or not super quickly, but separately. I'm a bigger fan of Cody Hodgson, who fans of the Manitoba Moose will remember was in the Vancouver Canucks system, played a little bit for the Manitoba Moose, and then the Canucks.
Hodgson, yes.
Yeah, Cody Hodgson.
Franzen doesn't have arbitration eligibility. Sorry, did I say Hodgson?
Yes.
Sorry, Franzen doesn't have arbitration. Sorry, Franzen had arbitration eligibility and opted not to go to arbitration. And
right,
so
Hodgson wouldn't because he was just coming out of his entry-level deal.
That's right.
And again, and correct me if I'm wrong, Richie. You have to have played 4 years in the NHL.
Yes.
Okay, so forget what I said about Hodgson. Cody Franzen, well, so they're both Codys, right? We got that right. Cody Franzen, you know, Richie, I really like him. Sikkimoose, BC, he's from the same hometown as Shea Weber. Big guy, 6'5". We were going over his numbers, and he had 29 points in 42 games, I believe, this year, which was his best season points per game. Now, as far as Cody Franzen goes, he's a top four defenseman for the Toronto Maple Leafs right now. And you have to think that he's wanting to get his best payday right now.
Well, let me get in there for 1 second, because that's absolutely true. All of what you said is true. And let's bring in another RFA who actually has, you know, doesn't have arbitration eligibility. And hasn't, you know, the other two guys forego that ability, is Nazem Kadri.
Right.
Now, the Leafs have about $4.8 million of cap space left to sign Kadri and Franzen. And yet, they gone out, you know, they signed Frazier because he went to arbitration, but they signed, you know, Paul Ranger to a deal, who plays defense. It's an odd situation. I mean, I don't think you're going to, there's no chance, really. They're going to be able to sign both those guys for $4.8 million. So, Something else needs to happen.
David Schultz of the Globe and Mail wrote about this yesterday. Richie, you mentioned that the Toronto Maple Leafs only have about 4.9, I think it is, in cap space, which isn't a lot. And they're not close to a contract. Kadri's side and Dave Nonis's side, obviously being the Toronto Maple Leafs. But Kadri's camp apparently wants a similar type of contract to Evander Kane. He wants 5-6 years, and he wants, you know, $5 million a year.
Are you giving him that?
I don't.
No.
It's too. I think it's too early. I don't think he has as much upside as Evander Kane. I'll say that much. I think Evander Kane's a better player. But Nazem Kadri really impressed me last year. I got to be honest. I mean, he was flip flopped from the NHL to the AHL with Ron Wilson. Everybody remembers that. And then Don Cherry stuck up for him when people said he was soft and not ready. And you know what? That time with the Toronto Marlies really helped Nazem Kadri. He dominated, scored a point per game in the AHL. And last year, he was almost a point per game in the NHL, 44 points in 48 games. Okay. So, you know, what's interesting about this article, and I tend to agree with what David Schultz is writing, it looks like they're going to do a similar contract as P.K. Subban got, which was a bridge contract where they give him 2 years, $2.5, $3 million a year, and then he can prove himself and then get the bigger contract after the 2 years.
That is logical to me. That's what I was going to say. You know, 2 years, $6 million, 2 years, $7 million, something like that is probably going to get it done. And then you see, is Kadri the real deal? And if so, they'll pay him. He'll have arbitration rights after that contract would be up. And so there'd be leverage on both sides, and then you could see he'd be in a Bogosian situation where he signed a 3-year entry level deal, a 2-year bridge deal, and then he'd, you know, have the ability to sign a long term deal. So Kadri, I think, does get that bridge deal. I think, you know, I don't think the Leafs know what they have there necessarily yet, and I don't think you want to commit six years to a guy you're not sure what you have. At the same time, you don't want to do 1 year, so I think two just makes, you know, is logical, and then 3 years is an issue of. Then you get 1 year away from the UFA status, and you're in Blake Wheeler, Brian Little territory, and you can hold the team, you know, up against the wall and say, well, 1 year arbitration and see you later, and you don't want to lose an asset for nothing. So Kadri, I think, gets done in that bridge deal. But then Franzen, if he signs for 3 or 3.5, Franzen isn't signing for less than 2.
He shouldn't.
So, and well, I like Franzen. Franzen moves the puck. He hits. He's not a great skater, but... he can play on the power play. I think he's evolved as a defenseman. I think Carlisle has helped him.
Yes.
And I think he has a place. He may be dealt.
He's a guy that I would love to see on the Jets. I mean,
They don't need any right-side guys, though.
I know. And that he's a right-shooting, most likely second-pairing guy. And that's where, you know, basically Bogosian is this year. And eventually, you know, Bogo and Trouba will both be in the top four. I mean, I'm not starting a rumor. I'm just saying I really like Cody Franzen. And you're right. He definitely doesn't skate like Jay Bouwmeester.
No.
But he's a very solid physical defenseman. He's got offensive talent. He's very smart. Like he's like a meat and potatoes defenseman, just a very solid defenseman. And I have to think that the main reason why he hasn't signed yet is because of the Kadri situation. And I do think those things are related. I don't think they're not related. And, you know, there have been whispers that, you know, the Leafs are going to go into training camp without those guys signed or maybe not. If those two guys aren't on the Leafs last year, I don't think they make the playoffs. I mean, Kadri was one of their best forwards last year, and Franzen was a top defenseman. Without those two guys, I don't think they make the playoffs last year.
They've added Boland, you know, and they've added Clarkson. So they can afford not have Kadri there for a while, but they can't afford to not have Franzen, to me, because the defense just isn't that good.
Last year you had, you know, Phaneuf and Gunnarsson and Franzen and Frazier, you know, stepped up after kind of being an AHL outcast. He's more of a bottom pairing defenseman, but no, Franzen is a second pairing defenseman for them now. Absolutely.
And so I think it's gonna be interesting to see. You know, I think ideally they want him to be that third pairing guy, but with his offensive production too, you know, that obviously bodes well for an arbitration case, which is why it's odd that he didn't opt for arbitration. Moving over to St. Louis, and St. Louis is a division rival of the Winnipeg Jets. And, you know, you could argue top five defenseman in the National Hockey League. And he didn't have the best year last year, but 2 years ago he had a great year, and that's Alex Pietrangelo. Fans will probably be familiar with him from the Canadian World Junior days. The Blues have cap space. They have over $7 million left. Everybody's basically signed now. So the issue with him is how long is it going to be? I think it's a Bogosian situation. Now, he doesn't have arbitration rights, but I think it's a Bogosian situation in terms of I think he wants to be in St. Louis. I think St. Louis wants him to be there. I mean, I see at least a six-year deal coming of this. What do you think?
I don't see how that doesn't happen. I do think it's going to be a 5 or 6 year deal, maybe even a 7 year deal. The number we keep hearing, though, as far as money is $7 million per year. And last year, Alex Pietrangelo and Jay Bouwmeester, that was one of the best defensive pairings in the entire league. And Pietrangelo pays 25 minutes a game. And his offensive numbers weren't as good as 2 years ago when he was, I believe, wasn't he nominated for the Norris, or he was just on the cusp of getting nominated for the Norris. He had 51 points. I think straight up, Richie, if we're talking numbers, Pietrangelo's a $7 million defenseman. I think he's that good. And I think he'll compete for a spot on the Olympic team. I don't know if he'll make it.
I think he makes the Olympic team.
I think he's that good. Him and Bouwmeester, as far as two skating puck moving defensemen. Yeah. I mean, you don't get much better than that. So it seems like there might be some contract demands that are preventing this, but you have to think they're not going into training camp with this as a distraction, because the St. Louis Blues this year, the playoffs were very disappointing last year, mm-hmm. The way they went out in the first round. So you got to get Pietrangelo under contract.
We talk about, we talk about Calgary, we talk about Friends, and the Blues can't afford to not have Pietrangelo in the lineup. I mean, that's simple. They're just not good enough without him there. So they can't say, oh, we'll hold you out and we'll see what kind of deal
you have.
He's
a top-end defenseman in the league right now.
Yeah. I think undoubtedly, and I think he's going to ascend to the top five.
He's only 23 too, he's not the best, or best is yet to come, as they say, right, Richie?
Young defenseman Jared Cowan. We talked about before we go to break. I want to talk about Cowan. Cowan has been apparently offered, according to the Ottawa Sun, an 8-year deal worth $28 million. So, do the math there. I just don't think that it makes sense for him to take 3.5 a year. And I realize it gives him the stability of an injury-prone player of $28 million guaranteed. But if he plays to his capabilities, and I know injuries could be a factor, if he plays to his capabilities, over the course of 8 years, if he signs three contracts or two contracts, I think he makes far more than that amount. I don't think Ottawa's trying to put pressure on him in the media, I think, to get to sign that deal.
That's what I thought when I saw that it's been leaked to Ottawa newspaper. To me, that's not a deal that you accept if you're his agent.
I mean,
you're giving up too many years where you can possibly improve your. I mean, Jared Cowan, down the road, the fact that he's mobile, he's big, he's tough. Everybody remembers last year. He's mean. He's not as good as Chris Pronger, mm-hmm. not as good of a skater, not as good offensively, but he's mean like Chris Pronger was. Mm-hmm. He could be a $5 or $6 million defenseman 5 years from now, right?
I think so. And James Gordon mentioned, he could be a top four guy or even a top two guy. So if you're going to say, what about Bogosian? Like, look at the Bogosian number, 5.1 a year versus that number. Huge difference. So to me, I'm Jared Cowan. I'm not going anywhere near that deal. I'm asking for maybe a 2-3 year deal or a long-term deal, just a higher cap number. I think at the end of the day, that's what it has to be. We have a lot more players to talk about, Ezzy. We have Hodgson, we haven't actually jumped into, and we did talk about it a little bit. We have Gustav Nyquist, Adam Henrik, who makes for a really interesting discussion because the Devils need scoring. And is he the player he was 2 years ago or the player he was last year? We also keep teasing the Landeskog issue, so we have to eventually talk about that, don't we?
Oh, we have to. He got a lot of matzo balls here.
Remus, what were you watching on the TV over there?
Was watching Usain Bolt win the 200 meter at the World Championship. He dominated.
Did he set a record or no?
No, he didn't.
You know what? This music makes me feel like partying.
It's only...
that one went right by. Remember in the movie when Party Boy? Remember he dances in Japan?
I can't keep up with the two of you.
I got that one, Ezzy. Really like to party.
I love it.
Last night, Remus was partying pretty hard.
I wasn't.
We walked out of an establishment last night, and people were pointing. That's Michael Remus from TSN 1290.
No one can't go anywhere now.
Remus signed three autographs before he went home last night.
Remus just signed an 8-year deal with TSN.
For $28.
Come on, you guys.
More after the break.
You're listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Five segments down, only three more to go. Saturday morning, Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Richard Pollock in the host chair for Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsburg, and Mike of the station, Remus. Joining me in studio, I believe, you know, I just mentioned Drew. We haven't mentioned him much at all. And
there's a reason for that.
There's a reason for that. Is there some tweets we have from Halifax where Drew's vacationing?
He's got two tweets here. First tweet from last night. I'm in Nova Scotia, running out of clean clothes to wear. Have a clean Bombers t-shirt. It will remain in the drawer, unworn. Ooh. All right, this is from today. All right.
No, better be better than that awful tweet.
Silence from you guys there. Things I discovered after a week in Nova Scotia. One, it's stunningly beautiful.
Oh, God.
I guess, should I read this in the Drew voice?
Yeah, please, the Drew voice.
One, it's stunningly beautiful. And saying I know Rick Ralph, TSN, means people will buy you drinks.
Drew needs to have that account taken away immediately.
I didn't know Rick was such a celebrity. It makes me want to go get some free drinks now.
Rick's actually bigger than the Beatles in the Maritimes.
Yeah, I actually mentioned Rick Ralph's name in Winnipeg.
Yep.
And they poured drinks on me.
Rick's a great guy. Well, hey, the fact that Rick lends us Remus for our show.
Yeah, Rick's nice of us. I mean, he charges us interest.
Yeah, he charges us a little bit of interest. Yes. But
a couple coffees for Remus. You have to provide Remus with food and coffee. Remus has a stipulation in his contract. Yeah. If he doesn't get food and coffee, he's not coming to do the show.
Yeah, come you have on. To always have a coffee.
I bring you guys coffee. Remember I brought all you guys candy?
Yep.
That was great. Whatever happened in those days?
Yeah. Well, the show's too early. You don't need candy at 10 a.m.
It's true.
12 to 3, you can have candy, but you're not eating candy before noon, I think. Candy and soda. You don't drink soda before noon. That's gross. Unless you're having an 11 o'clock lunch, then it's okay. Sometimes you have an early lunch.
What about drinking in general before noon?
Well, what do you mean? Coffee and water?
Well, like alcohol.
Oh, well, it depends. Is there a sporting event?
Well, there you go.
Only if there's a sporting event or if you're at the lake.
There's a lot of exceptions to your rules, Michael.
I think those are good exceptions,
That sounds
actually.
Like summer.
Yeah,
can we sign Remus to an extra deal for a minus amount of money?
Oh my God!
Cody Hodgson is in Buffalo. He was acquired in the the big trade really for Zach Cassian. That so far it looks like Buffalo really got the better of that deal. But obviously, time will tell. Hodgson, number one center on that team right now, probably. I mean, they have some strength down the wing. They're really a mess of an organization, frankly. And Hodgson probably knows that. His agent knows that. How do you see that coming about? Hodgson does not have arbitration eligibility, so I mean, Buffalo can kind of leverage him a bit, but at the same time, if they do have playoff aspirations, and in this day and age, I think every team has playoff aspirations, don't they need to get him signed?
Yes, and last year was not a good year for the Buffalo Sabres, nor was the year before that. And Cody Hodgson is a guy that a lot of people think was the better player in that trade. No, he was the better player in that trade, and he wasn't really working out in Vancouver as far as slotting in that second line center role. But again, Cody Hodgson coming out of the entry level deal, Richie, as we just mentioned, and not having the arbitration rights, you have to think that, again, the team probably wants a bridge contract. And this is, Darcy Regier and the Buffalo Sabres who have signed Ville Leino. And not just signed, but 2 years ago.
I think Terry Pegula signing those deals more than
Terry Pegula, right. Ville Leino and Christian Ehrhoff. We know how those two contractors sign out with the way that they have underperformed in Buffalo there. So you have to think that the Buffalo Sabres right now are a little bit reticent to give Cody Hodgson a 6-5-year deal. And I think it's really interesting, Richie, because this summer we've talked a lot about free agency and specifically restricted free agency as it relates to Zach Bogosian and Brian Little and Blake Wheeler and the contracts that they've signed. We've kind of delved really deep into that and done the mock arbitrations and really covered that a lot for the listeners, because that was a big deal for Chevy after the draft, right? That was his main order of business, to get those guys under long-term deals. But when you have the salary cap down plus the term limit on contracts, right? You have 8 years for your own players and 7 years. I think if you look at it, Richie, the guys that we're talking about, the eight guys I believe that we've mentioned here, you know, Cody Hodgson and Cody Franzen and Nazem Kadri and Alex Pietrangelo, mm-hmm. Michael Bodker, Adam Henrique, all of these guys are either coming off of entry-level contracts or they're just about to become unrestricted free agents, right? You're talking Kadri and Henrique and, right? So that's what's happening. You're seeing the agent wanting the six-year deal, the five-year deal, and the team really not being prepared to offer that deal. Pietrangelo, again, another guy, right? I think there's a theme here. How many of these guys are coming off of entry-level contracts? Five of them?
These six of them.
Six of them.
Yeah.
So you're having a situation where it's almost like the bridge contract versus signing a guy long-term and like you said, not knowing what you have here. And I think that they know that Cody Hodgson's a really good player. I mean, he was a really good junior player. Well, scored a lot of points, but is he a $6 million player yet? I mean, it's tough to say.
Look at their roster. I mean, the question is, you know, you have Stafford, you know, Ott plays center. He's more apt to be a third line center. Depending on what you want to do with Tyler Ennis, a player I love, Drew Stafford, winger, Lino can place wing, I mean, center, but he's more of a winger. Vanek's a winger. The question is to me is, I mean, first of all, Buffalo has this crazy center need. We know that. The question is Cody Hodgson a first line center on a bad team? And a second-line center on a good team, or a first-line center on a pretty good team. I don't think they know that.
Cody Hodgson is smaller, but offensively and creatively, he's a really good player. I think I would say, you know, if you want to throw out numbers, he's a 60 to 70 point. You know, that's probably his ceiling. Maybe as an NHLer, I don't think he's ever going to get 100 points. How many guys do, right?
Right.
So Cody Hodgson, I think, has above average offensive skill. Now, because of his size, mm-hmm. I wouldn't say that he's in the same class as, you know, throw out a name, Ryan Getzlaff, or a guy like Jonathan Taves, or, you know, and these types of players of that ilk. I think he's probably a second line center on most teams, right? Not really different than like a Brian Little, a guy who's got a lot of offensive talent, but, you know, he's smaller and he's just limited in what he can do. So as far as the Buffalo Sabres go, you're looking at their depth charts, and like you said, Richie, Tyler Ennis, we both agree he's a great player, but what else is there? So his agent is probably saying, okay, you're not going to sign Cody Hodgson. What else do you have right now? You've got Mikhail Grigorenko, who last year they sent back to the QMJHL. I mean, the Buffalo Sabres, and I think this is really interesting that we're talking about this because last week we talked about the UFAs, but these RFAs to me are way more fascinating because Nazem Kadri, Alex Pietrangelo, Cody Franzen, Cody Hodgson, you know, Jared Cowan, you're talking about guys that are all extremely valuable to their teams and played a big role
for sure
in the team's production last year.
You have to with the entry-level deals. You need to be able to have cheap talent playing well for you. Look at all, I mean, Buffalo's not as small as they were last year, and that was an issue up front, but their defense isn't any good. I mean, that's a problem. This team right now, unless Ryan Miller, it's a tremendous season. It's going to be trouble. And for Hodgson, I think it's the bridge deal or the long-term, and, you know, if you think he's going to be a 65 to 70-point guy, you know, what are you paying him for that? And you're talking about some RFA years. You paying him 4 a year for 5 years for, you know, something like that for a $20 million deal? I don't know. I
mean, right. Because of his age, is he 22 right now, Hodgson? 21 or 20? 23. He's 23. I just looked it up. So he's 23. And last year, you know, he had a decent season, but, you know, he wasn't top 20 in the league in scoring or anything. 34 points in 48 games. But you're talking about a guy right now, it's a lot of, you know, potential. He still hasn't put together a season where he's got more than, you know, 34 points, which that was a shortened season. But I mean, you're talking about a guy who's been in the low 30s. So if he's asking for a 4 or 5 year deal, averaging $4 or $5 million a year, you have to think that, you know, Darcy Regier and the Buffalo Sabres are saying, okay, hold on, maybe we'll give you a 2 year deal. This seems to me like Nazem Kadri and Cody Hodgson are in the same ballpark. I don't know if you agree with that, Richie, but I think it seems like the team wants a bridge deal. Yeah. The agent and the player want a longer term deal.
Both had, you know, kind of play in the AHL a bit and earn their stripes a bit. So yeah, I think you're right about that, Ezzy. I'm going to skip over Gustav Nyquist quickly because Kenny Holland said they're close on a 1-2 year deal. They're talking. Yeah. Kenny Holland will get that done. Adam Henrique. I'm not saying that Lou Lamoriello won't get done. I think it's a more interesting discussion though. Adam Henrique has no arbitration eligibility. He's really the second-line center for the Devils next year, behind Travis Zajac.
Yep.
is he what he was 2 years ago, or is he an asset earlier, or is he what he was last year as, and how do he, and then again, is this back to the bridge contract situation?
Well, you know, we were talking about Gabriel Landeskog and the 7-year deal he got with the Avalanche 2 years ago. Henrique was a runner up to Landeskog for rookie of the year with that 51 point season, but last year struggled and only had 16 points in 42 games, and I think that's hurting him right now. And he's another guy who's smaller, and it's a little bit of a different situation because he's 23, but he's still only really played two quote-unquote full years in the NHL because right. He played with Albany in the AHL out of the OHL. But I think that Henrique is a guy that right now for the Devils is absolutely key, and they struggled big time to score goals last year, and Ilya Kovalchuk is gone, as we all know. We talked about that a lot on this show, and everybody else has talked about it on their respective shows. But you've brought in Michael Ryder and Ryan Clough and Yager. But even with those guys, you still need Henrique there up the middle. And I do think that he, you know, is a talented player, offensively skilled player, and I do think he'll be better. And I think that, again, when you're coming off of a poor year and you're asking for a little bit more money when you've only had one good year, it's difficult. We know Lou Lamoriello isn't a guy that you want to play hardball with either.
2 years, $5 million, I think, for Henrique. He hasn't performed enough. I mean,
that's probably what Lamoriello's thinking. I don't think he's bringing out the 5 or 6 year deal at this point.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, he had great playoffs, 13 points, 23 games, and he really was a factor there. But you can't let that cloud your, you know, idea of what he's going to be, you know, on a go forward basis. Michael Bodker, we talked about earlier, as I mean, he doesn't, you know, didn't offer arbitration. I don't know whether or not, you know, I read something about them maybe being close to a deal before he decided not to opt for arbitration. In any event, I mean, he doesn't really have the stats that make him a great arbitration candidate, so that might have been a factor as well. He's 23 years old. It feels like he's been around forever, doesn't it?
He's played in the NHL since he was, just under 19, and he has shown glimpses. Bodker, I watch Bodker, and you watch him skate, and he's a big guy. Well, not that big, but he's a decent sized guy, and he's a good skater. Mm-hmm. But he's a little bit soft, and he's kind of been, this is just my opinion, but as far as the Phoenix Coyotes style of hockey, kind of being a suffocating defensive style of hockey with, you know, offense where you can get it, you know, it's been a bit of a contrast. And I think at this point, he still hasn't reached his potential. And we're still talking about Michael Bodker, top 10 draft pick from 5 years ago. And we're still talking about, you know, what he could be. So I think the jury's still out. He's a guy to me that I expect more of. And I think he can score more, like maybe be a 20-25 goal scorer. But he hasn't really quite proven that yet at the NHL level.
You mentioned the style of play. That's obviously a factor. You know, he had 7 goals last year in 48 games, 26 points. 5 years into his time in the league, so he's only 2 years left for UFA status, as and he actually took a, interestingly enough, he took a hit in salary from his entry level deal, as you mentioned, he was a top pick, to his second deal. So you wonder, if he made 1.1 last year,
right?
I mean, does he sign? If I'm Phoenix, I'm not that uncomfortable with signing a 2-year deal, bridging him into UFA, because you don't know what you got. I'm not that uncomfortable with a 2-year $4 million, maybe $4.5 million deal, and the system he plays in is a factor as well. And do we want to, you know what, let's go to break now. And then come back, and we're going to talk about the Malkin tampering issue. We're finally going to talk about Landeskog. I know you want to talk about that. We're going to talk about body check in the segment after. We're going to talk about Adam Foote having his number retired. And Jonathan Taves' comments, is it gold or bust for Canada? And what do you think about that? You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show, live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Being beat up and battered around, being sent up and I've been shut down.
Half past the hour, Legal Curve Hockey Show, the second hour of the show, of our 2-hour summer show. Richard Pollock filling in the host chair for Drew Mandel, the vacationing Drew Mandel. You know, by the way, I mean, Ezra Ginsberg in the studio as well as Michael Remus. You're listening to TSN 1290. You know, I didn't get the vacation memo. You took 2 weeks off in Fantasyland. Drew's taken a week off over in Halifax. Andrew's got time off. Gary's got time. Andrew being Hustler. Gary's got time off. Remo's going on the baseball trip that we went on last year, Ezzy. We'll talk about that in a second, Michael. I'm the only guy here who's not taking vacation this summer.
It's because, you know, contrary to, you know, what they might say about, you know, certain performers in Las Vegas, you're the hardest working man in show business. That's Richie Pollack right here. Doesn't take any time off. You know, he's out there practicing law. Okay. He's on the radio all the time. But we should mention, too, next week, A Legal Curve takes over H&L.
That's true. Yes, we did not mention that. Illegal Curve's on H&L all week.
All week.
Drew's hosting all week, and you and I are popping in and out as we...
Yes, we're popping in and out, and I've been told I can actually sit at Gary's chair.
Ooh.
And use the big microphone here, use Gary's mic. I usually sit in the middle here for people who aren't familiar with the studio in here.
Does it change your voice, like, you know, like Darth, like to the Gary voice when you're talking to it?
Yeah, people don't know this, but Gary actually has auto-tune on his on his microphone. So it distorts his voice. Gary's voice is actually much higher. He's probably going to tweet at me or text me now that I'm talking about him. But I'm filling in for Gary and Richie. You'll be filling in for Gary, and Drew's going to fill in for Hustler. Obviously, he's not going to do a very good job because he can't replace Hustler.
Hustler's one in a million.
But, Gary's easily replaceable on air.
What do you mean? You're going to get a text out of that one, Remo? You got a big
I'm
trip
just kidding.
Big trip coming up.
Yeah, I'm going to be gone. Going out of town.
That's it.
That's it.
You like the man of mystery persona, eh?
Look, I don't know. I'm not going to be like tweeting about it nonstop, like Hustler was. I mean, there's a lot of roaming chargers in the U.S. that I don't want to get.
Reem, you're saying you don't like Huss's tweets?
Wow,
I never said that.
I love his tweets. His Instagram.
It's great. No, it's great. I mean, I love begging people to tell me the bomber score on Twitter.
Ooh, is there beef on the station right now?
Yeah.
Between Huss and Remus?
No beef. I'm actually meeting up with him in Minneapolis on Monday.
You guys going to go to the baseball game?
We're going to the Twins game. Then we're going to a bunch of other games.
You'll have a great time, Remus. We'll, of course, sorely miss you. Gabriel Landeskog, and I mean that.
But, yeah, okay.
Gabriel Landeskog.
We have a shooter tutor that will be replacing you. Just kidding, Reem.
Gabriel Landeskog signed a long extension.
Yes.
With the Colorado Avalanche, obviously. We've unintentionally been teasing it all show. $5.5 million per year on a 7-year pact. He actually still has another year in his entry level deal left. So it's a 7-year $39 million deal, and then he's got this year left with a $3.5 million cap hit. So you're looking at 8 years at about $42.5 million for Gabriel Landeskog. I mean, guys, I think we know one thing about Gabriel Landeskog. He's mature. He's got an NHL body when he was 18. He is a leader, made him the captain. He had a really good – I was really impressed with him, seeing him in town 2 seasons ago with the Colorado Avalanche. His very polished game. Maybe not going to be your 90-point guy, but he can be your 70-point guy. He can score you 30 goals. Big, hard to move off the puck. What are your guys' overall thoughts on this contract?
Well, I'll jump in here, and then I'll let the station jump in after. I guess – Richie, we talked about this a little bit off air. You know, he did have the 1 year left on the entry level deal, so I was a little bit surprised, but not really, because I think that they know what they have in Gabriel Landeskog. Mm-hmm. I mean, they named him captain. He's a second overall pick. I mean, he was drafted, and you know, some people said that he could have been a first overall pick, mm-hmm. but you're talking about a guy who has so much upside, and he's so young. And when you're talking about, you know, the Colorado Avalanche now and locking up Matt Duchene and having Nathan MacKinnon come in, and then you throw in the whole new face of the franchise in the sense of Joe Sakic taking over hockey operations and Patrick Waugh coming in as coach and also having a role in hockey operations. But to me, this is something that they wanted to do because it not feel like a new era for the Colorado Avalanche with the first overall pick, getting Duchene under contract, and you know, there was so much negativity with the Colorado Avalanche. Where do you start? I mean, it was on ice, it was off ice. Ryan O'Reilly was a huge mess. Mm-hmm. And to me, this seems like a fair deal. I mean, when you're talking about his skill level, I mean, he is unbelievably talented, and he's got a defensive awareness.
Yes, he does.
And he's got great offensive skills, and he has those intangibles, and I think they've seen that based on his first year when he won the Calder Trophy as Rookie of the Year. So I think they know how special of a talent they have, and I think they're more than happy to lock him up for 7 years, a year before they really were forced to do it. I think that they're not – and I think Gabriel Landeskog's camp was probably pretty happy. They're looking at this deal, 7 years, $39 million, and they're saying, okay, he's getting paid pretty well. Maybe we could have got a little bit more if we waited a year, but probably not that much more. So I'm a big fan of Landeskog's, and I think the contract seems pretty reasonable to me.
52 points in 82 games his first NHL season, and then he only had 17 points in 36 games last year. I think Colorado's not really going by the numbers here. They're just saying we're going to sign our best players, Duchene, Landeskog, when McKinnon's available to sign. We're going to sign all these guys to long-term deals and just have this great core going forward, and just simplifying the method at all. You know, if you look at it from a numbers perspective, and again, from a Winnipeg Jets perspective, you know, you look at Blake Wheeler's contract and his offensive performance, obviously at a later age with more UFA years, of course. Landeskog is signing away three UFA years. So it's
and just quickly, Richie, I don't think that you can compare the two contracts. I mean, if you're going to, if anything, compare the Kane contract.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
Like, if you're going to compare any guy on the Jets to Gabriel Landeskog, it's not Blake Wheeler, it's Evander Kane. You're talking about a second round pick versus a second overall pick, pardon me, in 2011 versus a fourth overall pick in 2009. So you're talking about guys that were highly touted prospects and also guys that are a skill level up in the upper echelon of skill level for wingers. So if you're going to compare anything, Blake Wheeler was a guy who – it was a high draft pick, sure, but he took a while to get his feet going, and he's also 6 years older than Landeskog.
This – I totally agree with you, Ezzy. This team, Colorado, and I'm going to say this right now, I think Colorado will be the most exciting team in the National Hockey League to watch next year. Speed and offensive talent they have.
Not just on paper, but the down the middle, Nathan McKinnon's probably going to slot in as the third line center, but you've got Paul Stastny and Matt Duchene It's unbelievable what they have up the middle. Ryan O'Reilly. So
he's going to play. O'Reilly's going to shift to the wing initially.
That's
and he's
true.
Saying he's okay with it. They got Tanguay. People forget about the Tanguay acquisition.
Yes.
They can move the puck. Their defense isn't great. Their goaltending may be questionable, but they're going to be exciting to watch, no doubt about that. So if you're a Jets season ticket holder, you may want to grab a couple of those games because I'm sure they'll be pretty exciting. Quickly before we go to break, Evgeny Malkin made these odd comments, or his dad, excuse me, made these odd comments to a Russian media outlet. Regarding Dallas making an offer, allegedly making an offer to his son. Obviously, that doesn't make sense CBA-wise. Not make sense, meaning illegal, in that Malkin signed his extension on June 13th as an RFA.
Yep.
Before he was an RFA. So he was under property of Penguins, I believe he had another year left in his deal in any event. And so he signs his deal. And then his dad talks about the offer he got from Dallas. So
I don't think that offer ever happened.
Lost in translation. I mean, there are some who believe, not that an offer was made, but there's some who believe that Dallas's intention and main reason behind signing Gonchar was that they wanted to bring over Malkin.
Yeah, and we talked about that, and we've had Jim Nill on this show before,
and
we didn't ask him about that specifically, but they signed Sergei Gonchar because he was available, and they need help on defense. I'm sorry. I thought it was ludicrous that after the Pittsburgh Penguins were knocked out of the playoffs, people were suggesting that they trade Malkin.
Yeah, stupid.
I mean, what? I mean, you're talking about a former Hart winner here, a former Art Ross Trophy winner, arguably a top five forward, top three forward. Some people think he's the best forward in the NHL. You're talking about trading him? I mean, what? And as far as this business of getting offered a contract and bringing in Gonchar to possibly lure Malkin there, I think is far-fetched at best.
You're talking to players are talking about playing with each other. Maybe that's something like that. But I think it was probably lost in translation. I think we all agree that probably didn't happen quickly. We're golfing today, Ezzy. I haven't golfed in 2 years.
Hold on.
Should I be worried about the Claude Giroux golfing injury when his club shattered and fractured his finger?
I don't know. You are coming off of a baseball injury, to your finger there. But hold on. I didn't realize we were golfing. You told me that we were drinking on a golf course.
Oh, sorry.
So we're actually going to golf.
Yeah, Remus is your caddy.
Okay. All right.
Michael, your thoughts?
About the club thing? I can't believe that even happened.
Isn't that weird?
It's kind of odd. I mean... We got to talk to some other NHLers. I mean, I guess they're getting so much flex that it breaks the club.
Guys, for the listeners out there, just quickly, I know you probably want to go to a break quickly, Richie, but one of our friends, Aaron, who we're golfing with today, was actually once concussed from a golf ball.
I also got hit in the head with a golf ball before.
Oh, did you? Okay.
That's true.
So, we'll be careful. We'll take it easy. We'll do more drinking than golfing today.
I had a bump on my head the size of a golf ball. Ironic. One more segment to go. You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Unlike Drew, I want to let the music breathe a bit. We're talking Bruce Springsteen, born in the USA, 1984, Bobby Jean. He just turned 64 the other day.
He was only 20 years younger than Drew. Remember the time, I always bring this up, remember the time someone called into the station and asked if Drew, how old Drew actually was? And Remus is like, he's just like the same age, like a couple years older than...
Ezra Ginsberg, Richard Pollack, and Michael Remus in the studio for the final segment of this lovely Saturday afternoon in Winnipeg, Manitoba, August 17th, 2013. We were going to talk about hitting in hockey at a minor league level, and we're going to move that to next week because we don't have enough time. You know, we're used to the three-hour shows, so the two-hour shows throw us off a bit in that regard. But I do want to talk about Jonathan Toews' comments this week, and he made the comment, you know, simply in Canada, that it's gold or bust in terms of the Olympics.
I love it.
And I love it, too. And I think I agree that's my attitude as well. But there are people who say now with the way the game is moving into other countries and how good, you know, Sweden is and how good U.S. is and how good Finland is and it being in Russia, that shouldn't be the attitude anymore. How do you come out on that?
I think that's baloney. I mean, Canada still produces the best hockey players in the world. And, yes, other countries have good hockey programs. And, I mean, this isn't 1972 anymore where the Russians surprised the Canadians. I mean, right. Team Canada has not won a gold medal at the World Juniors since 2009, okay? And we've gone through the 5 years in a row and all that. And Russia and Canada have always been the top two countries at the World Juniors. But Canada just won their sixth consecutive gold at the Ivan Hlinka tournament, which is a precursor to the World Junior tournament, under 18 we're talking about. So, I mean, you know, Canada's hockey program isn't in trouble. And, you know,
is that attitude?
We have a hockey show, so we're allowed to talk about this. And we talk about the declining participation mm-hmm. rates in hockey. And sure, less people are playing hockey. And that's a fact. But I don't think it's drastic. And I don't think that... You know, we're talking, we're going to have empty arenas and hockey still isn't one of the preeminent sports. I think there are other sports out there, and I think that we have to start addressing things at a national and provincial level as far as the costs involved. I definitely think that is one of the major barriers to sport.
I have to say,
hockey particularly.
I think that the numbers are down, I think undoubtedly, and I think that's an issue. In terms of this sport as a recreational sport, I think the top-end talent will come out in any event.
Yep.
But I think that the lower-end guys who you want to play in the rec leagues and stuff are tapering off, which isn't a good thing. So at a fundamental grassroots level, they need to address that. But I do think that the top guys are still going to be the top guys.
Okay, but back to, you know, Jonathan Toews and Team Canada, okay? Canadian, you know, kids and adults everywhere are... You know, most hardcore hockey fans wish the Olympics were tomorrow. And I mean, people want the players to be passionate. And, you know, when Gretzky came out with that passionate speech in 2002, mm-hmm. I mean, Canadians love that. And the thing is, when Americans come out, whether it's a guy like Ryan Kessler and said, you know, we're going to beat Team Canada. I'm a Canadian, and sure, I'm a hockey fan at heart. I guess I'm, you know, hoping for Team Canada. I think, you know, we're supposed to say we're not cheering for one country, but I'm Canadian. I mean, mm-hmm. I grew up wearing a Team Canada jersey and all that. But it doesn't mean that Ryan Kessler shouldn't be, you know, passionate and strong in his convictions that the American team is going to win, or Daniel Alfredson, or, you know, an Ilya Kovalchuk. I mean, sure, you want to see a guy, you know, excited and saying that the team wants to win gold. Because, Richie, at the end of the day, for the Canadian team, the Russian team, the American team, the Swedish team, they are going for gold. Anything else but gold isn't, you know, winning. And regardless if a guy comes out and says that, which a lot of them, I think, are. And I mean, this is sports. It's all about winning.
Finland has been pretty proud of, like, bronze medals and such before. Let me ask you guys this quickly before we go to cheers and jeers. Would you watch – are you waking up in the middle of the night to watch the bronze medal game?
Yeah. What time? Are we talking
three in the morning? Are you watching the bronze medal?
Waking up, I'm just going to bed.
If Canada's in the bronze medal game, are you waking up to watch the game?
Yeah, Reem, it's not till February. We'll stay up for that. We'll watch that.
Maybe not. What day of the week is
it? Get some breakfast and get some McDonald's breakfast.
What day of the week is it? You know, do you want me to know what color pajamas you're wearing too? I mean, let's go to Cheers and Jeers.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And Jeers.
No, not good enough. He's a bad boy.
I never seen something stinks like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Mr. Ezra Ginsburg.
Okay, as you guys know, I usually cheer. So I'm actually going to cheer someone who I don't know if he's ever been cheered on the show before, but I'm gonna cheer Gary Bettman, and it's because I like the way how he handled the New Jersey Devils situation. He found an owner quickly. He facilitated that sales transaction, got it approved by the Board of Governors. There was the press conference earlier this week, and Josh Harris, owner of the 76ers, has come through and provided solid ownership for the New Jersey Devils. He made sure that an ugly ownership situation didn't happen again like it did in Phoenix. And a lot of that wasn't his fault, by the way. So I'm going to cheer Gary Bettman. I think people are going to be a little bit surprised by that. But, I think he deserves it.
I have a cheer for this week. And my cheer this week is going to go to Jonathan Toews. We mentioned Jonathan Toews before. But Jonathan Toews gets the cheer because he talks about PEDs. And he mentions that hockey players, let's not be naive. Hockey players are on, or maybe on PEDs, and we shouldn't, close our eyes to that. And that people who do that are cheaters. And I think at the end of the day, that of course is I like that honest, forthright discussion about these topics. I forgot to mention this segment of the show is brought to you by the Certified General Accountants Association of Manitoba. The CGA Association of Manitoba is the largest, fastest growing, and most diverse accounting body in the province. Did you know that CGAs are among the top 5% of income earners in Canada with an average yearly salary of $72,000 for new graduates? For more information, contact the CGA Association of Manitoba at cga-manitoba.org or 204-477-1256. The CGA Association of Manitoba. We see more than numbers. That does it this week, guys. 2 hours flew by.
We're ready for the golf course, Richie.
Ready for the golf course. Drew Mandel will be back in the host chair next week if we unlock the door to the studio. Michael Remus will be away on vacation, so I believe Tim Debenham will be back in his seat. Remus, enjoy your vacation.
Thank you.
For James Gordon of the Ottawa Citizen, I'd like to thank him for joining us to talk about the Danielle Alfredson saga, and it certainly is a saga. It's a beautiful Saturday. Go out and enjoy yourself, as Drew would say. Doesn't ask you to. He tells you to. Go out and enjoy yourself. Been a pleasure. I've been happy and privileged to host this show. For Ezra Ginsburg, I'm Richard Pollock. We'll see you next week at 10 a.m.
You've been listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch The Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.